Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise with us when it comes to growing a business within the tech industry. My name is Gary Lafter, your host and founder of the Growth Focus Partnerships, where we take tech leaders and user expertise to elevate them to being an authority in their field so their conversations turn into clients and their knowledge turns into pipeline. On this episode, we are going to be talking about churn. What is churn exactly? How do we deal with it? What is the power of it? And how can we actually utilize the knowledge of churn and the numbers of churn to actually make our business grow? We're also going to be talking about founder-led marketing, what it means, how important it is to be the face of the business out there, and what's working and what's not. So I can't wait to get into this episode and introduce our guest. So without further ado, Nick, it's a great pleasure to have you here today. Why don't you just start off by introducing yourself? Tell us who you are and what is it that you do?
Hey, well, thanks for having me, Gary. My name is Nick Fogel. I'm the CEO of a B2B SaaS company called Churnkey. And just like you said, we help companies with churn. We help anybody who's got a churn issue. We help you to mitigate that and have happier, healthier customer relationships.
Well, fantastic. Well, I can't wait to get to dive deeper into this as we get on. But as per usual, I'd like to delve a little bit back into you and get to know you a little bit better. So why don't you give us a quick snapshot of who you are and how did you actually get to where you are today?
Man, well, I'll try to give you the 1 minute condensed version. It's easier said than done. I went to school, studied economics, graduated in 2008, financial crisis, boom. What am I going to do? No jobs. I was interviewing with banking companies. Hey, I'll go to law school. It turns out I didn't really like the practice of law, became an attorney. I didn't have the room for creativity. I always wanted to build my own company and law wasn't doing it for me. I wanted to build my first startup and I tried to coax some engineers into building it. Nobody wanted to build it for me. So I ended up teaching myself to code. This was back in 2012. And yeah. So from there, I actually really enjoyed coding, writing code, solving hard problems. And eventually I was able to get an actual engineering job. And as I was doing that, I was working on side projects. Back in 2015, started a side project that turned into a full-fledged company. We grew that in 2021. We sold the company, had a nice exit. But the biggest problem we faced with that company, particularly as we got ready to sell it, was that we had a massive churn problem. Matter of fact, like our ICP customers that we were selling to were podcasters. So we'll get a little meta here, but podcasters have very high churn rates because a lot of people, unlike you, Gary, a lot of people will start a podcast, do five episodes, and then they're like, I need to take a break, or I don't know if this podcasting thing is for me. And we started solving this churn problem as we worked with podcasters. And we realized the problem that we were solving, and we spent a year working on this problem before we were able to sell that business for the right multiple. But we realized this is a universal problem for any sort of subscription business where there's essentially a mismatch between what is it that the customer gets, what's the value the customer's getting, and what's the value the business is getting. Is there some better middle ground to keeping a customer and having a longer, healthier relationship with them where they're getting value and the business is also able to make a profit?
Yeah, that's a really key point, isn't it? And we hear the word churn constantly, especially within the industry, but it's almost one of those terms where it's just a very loose term. People know what churn is, they understand it and just think, oh, it's part and parcel of business. But when you and I have been talking before, it is this leaky bucket. They spend more time, companies are spending more time trying to put new people into the top of the bucket, yet not fixing their holes. And if they could just plug some of those holes called churn, that increases their profitability. What insights can you share with the viewers and the listeners who are on this about refocusing their mindset when it comes down to churn?
Yeah, I mean, churn, when you think about it, if you had like, let's just say you had like an 8 to 12% monthly churn rate, that means you're going to have to replace half of your entire customer base every 5 or 6 months. I mean, when you look at it that way and you're like, you can only outgrow churn for so long. And that's a common thing when I'm talking to a prospect or a business. Sometimes you have a growth focused person and they're like, no, we're growing like, you know, we're growing so fast. Like churn isn't a problem. And I'm like, it's not a problem yet. Not to mention like when you think about the cost of running ads now and user acquisition is getting so much more expensive than it was 5 years ago. It's actually much more expensive to find that new customer than it is to keep an existing customer. If you know, what is it that your customer is actually looking for? Really comes down to understanding your customer. And then there's like accidental churn too. That's something that is often overlooked where payments fail. You know, you've got a credit card and everybody who's listening or watching has received an email saying, hey, your card's expiring, or hey, your card failed. And a lot of companies don't have automations and the right tooling in place to stop that accidental churn from happening.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point, isn't it? Because we've all had those emails. And it's what, again, it's like, yeah, okay, I'll get around to doing that later. And it's by best intentions that they don't want to do the churn, but life gets in the way and then they forget about it and then it expires. And then there's that churn that happens. So, you know, give us a quick snapshot. For those who don't know what Turnkey does, can you just give us a quick snapshot of how does Turnkey help and who do you serve?
Yeah, so at Turnkey, we look at two types of churn, predominantly voluntary churn. So that's when, hey, customer has the intent to cancel. That's one thing we solve for. And the other one is the failed payments problem. Massive, massive problem with failed payments. This is an easy one to fix with the right automations and intelligence in place. You know, there's kind of like a three-legged approach to tackling involuntary churn. One is the email that everybody's gotten. Problem with most emails is you get it and it's inconvenient for you as a customer. You don't want to go out there. That's why it's a procrastination problem rather than like a fundamental churn problem. You don't want to go out, remember your password, log in, pull out your credit card, update it. So we make it really easy so you don't have to log in. You just automatically update your card. On a mobile device, it takes like 30 seconds, which turns out that makes a big impact on reducing your churn rate. We also have intelligent retries. So it's nice to be able to retry a card before you need a customer's intervention. You don't want to bug a customer who's busy and has a full email inbox already. So if you can retry the card, that's another great way to tackle it. And then the other one is just like in-app, like let somebody know within the application that, hey, you've got a payment failing. Here's the easiest way to update that. So that's what we do. It solves for failed payments in a number of cases, but in some situations, we see 80% of involuntary churn and failed payments being recovered through this product. And then on the flip side, voluntary churn, this is a fun problem to solve. It goes back to like the behavioral economics stuff I was interested in undergrad. You just think about it like, you know, any problem that is behavioral, you've got two parties, they want different things. Somebody is canceling, there is something wrong. There's some reason that they're choosing to leave. And if you know the reason that they're leaving, you can do something about it. So if somebody had an issue where they had a, during COVID, this was a big one. Everybody was like wanting to pause subscriptions because there was so much financial uncertainty. Like I got to go freeze everything. And there wasn't a clear way to pause things. So we enabled the ability to take a break from a subscription. We also facilitate a discount or a different plan based on a user's feedback. If a user was not happy with their plan, maybe you could offer them a hidden plan, something that looks at them as an individual and says, hey, you've been with us for 2 years. Let's get you legacy pricing. So there are a lot of different levers where you're able as a business to meet the customer where they are and find a better middle ground where you're giving them, continuing to provide value, but you're also able to make a profit. Nice thing about SaaS businesses and really any subscription business is you've got very healthy margins. And if you can maintain profits and handle your COGS, then you can give something away temporarily.
Do you know what it is? I'm fascinated. Well, I'm listening to you and my eyes are popping all around here because I've got these questions that are going. I think that's a really good point there. Probably people were watching, as I said, watching or listening go, that's a really good point. But one thing that really came out of what you just said there, certainly in my perspective, was one of the key elements there to reducing churn is getting to know your customer properly. Don't treat them just like another subscription, another number into the revenue pot, but actually saying, okay, we know you, we know who you are, how long you've been with us, let's find out more about you. And the word you use was individuality. It's like let's talk to them as an individual and really point out and just find out what is it that you like, what is it that you don't like, and what can we do to help you.
Precisely. That's one thing we enable is like really granular detailed segmentation where you should not treat a customer who's been with you for 3 years the same way as somebody who just signed on a month ago or 2 months ago. They have different needs, different preferences, and it feels great to be recognized as an individual and have something that's specific to you and how you use the product. So it's really cool because, you know, we integrate with billing providers and we can figure out, you know, what is the best offer for this individual.
Yeah. And I think what most businesses and SaaS companies tend to forget is that more than likely, a very, very strong percentage, a high percentage, is that the client, the customer, is in a different place today than they were when they first subscribed. What their needs have changed, their desires have changed, their goals have changed, things have changed. And like you said, if you're treating them like when they first came on, but their needs then were totally different to today. And you have to get to know that. Otherwise, they're just going to leave you because you're treating them just like they were before.
It's really interesting when you look at it through that angle and you even look at, we have so much data and benchmarking and we can look at different times of the year. It's like, this is a very high churn, November, December, very high churn months. Why is that? people have higher expenses during that time of year. They've got vacations, they've got Christmas holidays, they've got other things that they're needing to allocate cash to. And businesses need to be able to adapt and adjust to that. The idea of uniform pricing, like it's the same price forever. If you don't like it, you can leave. Now, that's a very antiquated model, but it's still how the majority of businesses run things.
Yeah. I love what you said earlier about creating a legacy pricing, a price model. And people would like to feel that they were part of the beginning, or certainly part of the growth, irrespective of when they came in and said, okay, we're going to celebrate that. And thank you for giving you something like legacy pricing. And, you know, people just like to be acknowledged, and something like that, I think, would be extremely powerful.
I think the Netflix example is relatable right now, or any streaming service. I remember when I first signed up for Netflix streaming, you know, it was like $7 a month or something. Yeah. And I looked the other day and it's like $25 a month or whatever they've changed it to. And I'm like, man, I was early, an early adopter. I'm not watching half the stuff you've got out there. I don't have the options. Oh, do I want ads in Amazon Prime Video? No, I don't want ads. Why am I having to pay so much more for it now? The value is the same that you're getting. And then they change price and they remove something or introduce more friction. And that doesn't sit well with consumers who've been loyal.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Very, very good points there. So, Nick, let's talk about growth. When it comes to building a company, say, what's really working for Turnkey when it comes to generating leads and scaling revenue today?
It's changing so fast. AI is turning, I mean, it's just turning the whole industry around with how you need to be strategically focused long term. One thing we've done well for the last three companies we've built has been investing in evergreen content. So like, you've got to lay this foundation, and there's no quick reward in a lot of cases. Like, you've got to build your brand and you've got to build out the foundational helpful content. So that could be, you know, blog posts and articles. It could be podcast appearances. Anything you can do that provides value to your end user, you need to be doing that as early as possible and just building up this mountain of content. I mean, today, the cool thing is when somebody has a churn problem, they find us. Unless, you know, we get extorted by Google Ads and somebody's trying to bid on our brand name or something, in most cases they find us. And that's a product of just years of discipline and continued execution. In the short term, there are some really cool things that are working. And we found a few of these different levers over the years. Partnerships, particularly if you're in the B2B world, finding, you know, larger ecosystem partners that you can kind of come in on and add value to their platform or their approach. That's huge. We're a partner with Stripe. Stripe is a massive company. They're growing so fast. And that was a smart strategic decision we made to go to their conferences and to sponsor events and to really align ourselves with a key partner like that. That's a pretty, establishing a partnership's hard. It's complicated. A lot of people involved, but the returns can be high and it can be shorter term than waiting around for your content. Video, it's another one. We're a little late to the video train, but we're starting to see a lot of great results from our video content as well as our podcast. So you have this, I'd say, like a omni-channel approach to marketing these days, where you do have to test a lot of channels. You have to be disciplined with data and execution. Some of the influencer stuff can work. It's hit or miss though. You really have to understand if it's a newsletter or if it's an influencer on video. You've got to know what is that audience before you throw a lot of money at that channel. Because sometimes it's really successful. Sometimes you spend a lot of money and it's crickets. You get nothing. The final thing that we're really interested in right now is optimizing for AI. So if you think about these LLMs, they are starving for content. I mean, that's the biggest problem I think AI is going to face with the next generation of models. They've slurped up all of the information that's out there, all the books, all the web. So you need to be creating really timely, helpful content that nobody else has that's unique to you. And when you do that, the LLMs will pick that up. So I have some colleagues and friends who have other SaaS businesses, and some of them are having a lot of success when you start to get picked up by ChatGPT, let's say. If you are the only one that's catering to certain topics there, you're going to be actually recommended within ChatGPT. And the conversion rates are very high because it's higher than just search intent or like a Google ad placement. It's like you're deep into the weeds looking for something, talking with ChatGPT or Perplexity. So my understanding is that the leads are of higher quality coming from that than they are from traditional Google searches.
Yeah,
so that was
absolutely
a long-winded answer to your short question.
Yeah, no, well, listen, I'm gonna break some of that down because there was so much there, Nick, that was absolutely some fantastic insights. So I think first and foremost, I think let's go back to a typical problem when it comes to the industry, when it comes to the tech industry, the industry we're in, is that we will build, the attitude of we build it and there will come the field of dreams. You know, it's going to be so great that they're just going to love it. They're just going to flood to us. And we know that doesn't work. It doesn't work, because it's just every single day there's a new SaaS product coming on the market. Well, 15 new products coming up every single day, or whatever the case may be. So, but what you mentioned in there, you know, and it was very, very fast that you said, is that you've still got to be out there being top of mind. And you can't just suddenly think, okay, now I haven't got the necessary leads in, let's try and be the voice, because there's so many other people trying to be the voice out there. And then, like you said, there was like, you know, we're getting out there, we're doing our videos, we're doing our podcasts, just to so we can be the voice. So yeah, the next thing I wanted to break down on that one was the events. So you've mentioned SEO, events, partnerships. How are you prioritizing these channels right now? We were talking earlier, you know, you got the event season is just coming up to an end. And so how do you prioritize what's important, what's worth going to, and what you just should avoid?
Yeah, we're talking about that right now as we're looking at budgeting for the back half of 2025. The way I look at it, I want to measure everything. And I'm going to look at, we're weird in terms of startups. I like to be default alive. And that means like, I'm not just going to raise the next venture round and spew money to grow. I want to do it like I'm building a real business, not just get indebted and have tons of, you know, VC cash that I'm spewing out. Like, I want to be tactical with where each dollar goes in the company. And that applies to events. Events can get very, very expensive. You got flights, you got fees, you got sponsorship costs. There's a lot. And we've done a lot of events that have been crickets. There's nothing that comes out of it. So our take now is like, hey, let's only sponsor two or three events a year that have the highest concentration of our people who are ready to buy, our ICP. And that makes a big difference. So that's the way we prioritize. And then when we get back from an event, we need to make sure that we're measuring, we're doing our outreach, we're following up with people, and we're closing enough deals to have justified that expense in the first place. So that's the way, a little different than your traditional VC company that just sponsors everything. It's about being tactical and knowing who is going to be at the event. Are there partners there? What is the value that I want before I go here? What do we need to see? So I'd say that's the way I look at events now. It can be exhausting and demoralizing to bring a bunch of sales folks to an event and you don't have the kind of traffic at a booth and you don't have the sort of follow-up afterwards that yields fruitful sales activity.
Yeah, but I did tell you, the events are hard work, and we hear time and time again that it didn't work. It was a big flop, you know, and like you said, we spent a lot of money with flights, hotels, getting there, the booths and whatnot, but there was no strategic plan. When you ask them what was the strategic plan, we thought, well, we just turned up like we normally do, and we hope to grab some of the crowd by having some kind of gimmick. But those who we see who are successful when it comes to events are the ones who are saying, right, I have already pre-planned meetings of who I'm going to meet there. I know what I want to get out of it. I've got an ROI that I need to hit. And you work a plan, reverse engineer that plan in order to hit that ROI. So you understand that it's now an expense that needs to be justified and profitize upon. And I think this is the key thing, rather than just showing up. And you're right, the VCs of run and run fast, look, just go and do it, you know, and not worry about the return. That's why probably people aren't getting the results out of it. But I want to touch on partnerships, because partnerships is a very much of a big key buzzword when it comes in tech, especially within SaaS. But so many people get partnerships wrong. You mentioned your one with Stripe, and people who have listened to this and watched this podcast, or even know me, my clients, know that I'm always outcome-led first. What is the outcome the client's going to get? What is the outcome the partner is going to get first? Mm-hmm. And someone like Stripe, for you, that is a joint outcome. If you can reduce churn, they keep raking in the money. It's an ideal win-win for both, as opposed to just a partnership for partnership's sake. When it comes to partnerships, Nick, what insights can you share with us about finding and creating good partnerships?
Well, we made a lot of mistakes there in the early years. We were new to B2B. This was our first B2B company. And everybody's like, oh, you're in B2B. You've got to do partnerships. So we were just like, all right, we'll build this integration. We'll build that integration. And the problem is you spend all this time with engineering and product and people. And if you do that, you end up with a huge capital expenditure. And it's demoralizing because you build the thing, you think you've got a partnership in place, but you never define the outcome. What do we think the outcome is going to be through this relationship? And partnerships are hard work. Like, there's a human element. There's often a product element. Sometimes there's a kickback or affiliate or referral fee. You've got to weigh all of those concerns. And the best partnerships are ones that are mutually beneficial, where you don't need to do any kind of fee sharing or anything like that. And you can identify, like, hey, this is Stripe. This is a good example. Their mission is to increase the GDP of the internet. But everybody that uses Stripe has a big churn problem. And for every customer that we can help keep for businesses, well, Stripe is often the merchant or processor for these. So Stripe gets closer to their goal by us hitting our goal of helping businesses keep customers. So that it's just, you know, that kind of relationship is critical. We have other billing partners. I'm not going to name names. They don't have any kind of partner program. And we built early integrations with them. And it's like, why did we do that? There's nobody over there who's going to bat for us. We've spent all this money building these things out, working with their customers, but there's nobody there. And if I had it to do over again today, I would have looked first to see, do they have a partner contact? Do they have any resources? Do they have any sales team that we could go in to work deals with together? And most of them don't.
The key thing, and that is, if it can create a win-win, and I said, we kicked this bit off with saying that partnerships for partnership's sake is just not worth them. It's not worth the time or the effort to put into it. But when there is a joint goal, it doesn't have to be the same goal. It just has to be a joint goal that both can help each other achieve their respective goals. Then those partnerships are worth pursuing and making sure that you deliver upon those results. And it does take time, doesn't it, Nick? There's so many people who just expect a partnership to start producing immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've been partners with Stripe for 3 years, and we're seeing the fruits of that really unfolding this year.
Yeah.
You know, there was
that's the key thing. Long term, isn't it?
It's gradual, and then it's all at once.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about things that didn't work. You know, you said, we're always learning by our mistakes, and that's the key. Mistakes, I don't mind mistakes at all in business. I think mistakes are actually very important because you got to know what didn't work and then assess from it. What was one particular tactic, growth tactic, that you were so confident that would work, but then ended up being a total flop?
This might be not directly related to what you're getting at here, but my head goes to like the biggest mistakes you make as a startup or as a new business is building something and not knowing who's going to buy it, not having a clear plan of commercializing that. We made a number of these and everyone has been very painful. So we built a product. It took like a year to build it. And we were just so confident that this thing was going to be a game changer for everybody and that everybody would want it, that we didn't do the thing we knew we needed to do. We had that field of dreams mentality you mentioned. It's like, we're going to build this thing kind of in stealth, not going to get a lot of feedback initially. And when we drop this thing, they're going to be racing toward us. And it did not manifest in that way at all. In fact, most people were like, yeah, I'm not comfortable with this, or like, this isn't accurate. And it just turned out that we had not done enough of the early critical work to identify the market. Who are the buyers here? What are the unit economics of this? Because this was a powerful machine learning tool that did cost us a lot of money to actually run and process for businesses. So my biggest mistakes, growth and market related, come down to not understanding who is the buyer here. And that's a common one for new founders, new entrepreneurs, anybody new to the startup world. It's like, you usually have all these ideas. That's the prototypical startup founder, business owner. You want to pursue these ideas. They're exciting. It's fun to imagine what the future would look like with your impact on the world. And the most common mistake I see early stage founders make is adopting that mentality. We just got to build this thing. I don't want to show it off because it looks ugly or it's not fully formed. I'll wait and I'll talk to customers once it's ready and it's going to be amazing. The best products are the ones that look horrible, but they solve a real problem and people are willing to pay you for that despite how ugly it works.
Yeah, I think that's a really key point there. And I'm glad you shared that from your vantage point, because as you said, there's a lot of SaaS and tech leaders. They tend to hold back and wait for all the lights to be green first before they actually launch. And you're not learning, you're still building, but you need to learn as you build and have various iterations of it to make it pretty, in your words, you know, from ugliness to prettiness. But you can't do that from your head. It's got to go out there in the market and let the market tell you what's right, what's wrong, and how to grow from that. So that's right. My other question to you would be on when it comes to tech lead and SaaS, from your vantage point, Nick, what are most of them missing when it comes to reducing churn?
Most people aren't doing anything about it. It's funny. A lot of businesses, you know, we actually see this. It's not a problem with second-time founders, second-time operators who've done it before. They usually come to us before they have any business. We're like, you should probably wait a little bit. They're like, no, I know this is a problem. I had it in my last business. Because that's usually like a terminal tipping point for a previous business that they've had where we're growing like a rocket ship and then we plateaued because of churn. The mistake we see a lot of new startup founders and entrepreneurs make with churn is we're growing like crazy. We're doing awesome. We're going to worry about churn later. Churn is a painful problem, especially when you are so invested in the company that you're building. It feels like a breakup every single time you watch, you know, oh, we lost this customer. So it's easier to just go about your day, hey, look at all the growth we're having, and point to that and kind of stick your head in the sand when it comes to, you know, customers you're losing. I think that's the challenge. Another challenge with churn too is there's not like a churn person at most companies. You've got a chief revenue officer. Sometimes they're concerned about churn. You have a customer success team. Sometimes they're concerned about churn, or they're like KPIs are attached to churn. They don't have the power to do something about it. So that's another issue we face with a lot of larger businesses, is it's like a multidisciplinary team. You've got to get together and make sure they understand, hey, this is the business impact. Every 1% of churn decrease results in massive compounding gains for your business. And humans really struggle with that idea of like compound growth, viral growth. We saw this during COVID when it was like, it was hard for the human mind to comprehend how fast that curve would slope upward. And the same thing is true with things like churn, where by reducing it, you're getting compounding results from multiple months of customers staying with you.
Yeah, and that's the key thing, isn't it? And I'm glad you brought that, the compounding, because you're absolutely right. If you just reduce it by X percent, then the compounded return, the compounded increase in the other end on profitability is dramatic. But you've got to focus on the problem first, plugging that hole rather than just ignoring it, like you said, and putting your head in the sand and go, oh, I'll deal with that later on because I'm focused on the revenue growth. So talking about revenue growth, talking about long-term game, what does success look like for Turnkey over the next sort of 12 to 24 months? And what's driving that vision?
Yeah, well, success, you know, the North Star I have is I want to double LTV for anybody that goes through one of our products. So like whether that's our cancel flows, we also have a reactivation product, which is separate, but for involuntary churn, where there's a touch point where Turnkey makes an impact, or our cancel flows where Turnkey makes an impact. We want to double the LTV. So lifetime value for anybody watching or listening. Lifetime value is the total amount of payments a customer gives during the lifetime that they're a customer. And a lot of times that's a really pivotal point where somebody makes the decision not to churn and they take an offer that's a better fit. And we want to make sure that we are increasing that value in a way that is so measurable and impactful for the business that it's like a no-brainer to use our product. The other thing, we've saved businesses about $150 million to date in reducing churn. We've really been measuring that stat for the last 3 years. We've been around for five, so it's probably a little higher than that. Looking out 24 months, I want to hit that $1 billion mark. I'm hoping we can do it in 12 to 18, but my two-year goal is to hit $1 billion in total revenue protected and saved through the Turnkey platform for our customers.
Well, I tell you what, as a product and a service that's very much needed out there, and listening to you and talking to you and knowing you, Nick, I have no comments at all that you won't hit that at all, you know, because it's such a great product you're out there. So if one founder listening, if there was a founder who's listening, this is your final question, Nick, you know, it's a bit of a loaded question really, but if there was a founder listening and you wanted them to take away one thing from today's episode, what would you want that one thing to be?
You've got to know your customers. Mm. You've got to know them deeply. Everything else is peripheral to that question. And that's essentially what we solve for with canceling. Why are they leaving? You've got to know that. If they're canceling, like collect feedback, have a survey. And ideally, you should be capturing feedback through interviews way before that point. When they first sign up, like why are they signing up? Why did they come here in the first place? And then like having meetings with a select number of customers. It could be random if you're B2C, or it could be high dollar amounts if you're B2B. But as a CEO, like go meet with your customers, go talk to them. The best thing a founder can do is actually do most of your sales in the first few years. I did like 150 demos. I hated sales before, but that made me much better at product. I was more comfortable working on the engineering and product side in the early days, but then things weren't going well. I had to let go of our first AE. I was the sales guy. And as much as I dreaded that initially, I began to love it because I had so much learning. So yeah, long-winded answer. The short version is you've got to know your customers deeply.
I think that's a great insight to end on, Nick. And yeah, immediately what came to my brain is that there's people, I think everyone will be nodding there, go, yes, I understand not knowing your customer. But actually, how often do you get to know your customer after they've bought? There's a lot of work that goes into knowing your ICP to get them to buy. But it's all then you just drop off. Oh, we got them to buy now. Let's just focus on the next new person and then the next new subscriber. But as you would say, know your customer, know your client all the way through the transaction, all the way through the relationship. I think that is absolutely key. So Nick, thank you very much for joining us. You know, I can't believe where the time has gone. If people want to get to talk to you or potentially work with you, what's the best way of getting hold of you?
Yeah, you can reach out to me by email. I'm just nick@turnkey. Alternatively, I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter, although I'm not very active on Twitter these days, at Nick Fogel. But both LinkedIn, I've got the Nick Fogel handle on LinkedIn and Twitter. I was early to most of these things. So I guess that's a benefit of getting older these days.
Well, I'll make sure those links are in the show notes, Nick, so they can just go straight to you. So again, once again, thank you very much for joining us today and sharing your insights. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here today.
Well, thank you for having me, Gary. This was fun.
Yeah, absolutely it was. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. And as normal, for those of you who've been and watched and listened to our episodes, if you've picked something up from Nick, if you thought that's a great idea or I never thought of that, make sure you like it, make sure you comment it so other people can see what you've picked up as well. But more importantly, this is about growth, and we grow by standing on the shoulders of giants like Nick and the other leaders that we have on the show. So make sure you share episodes. Make sure you share episodes with other people who you think that you can help grow as well, so that everybody can grow. So until the next time, keep working hard, keep striving, but more importantly, be profitable, and we'll see you on the next episode. Bye-bye.